can, and you know, we embrace our scrappiness. We embrace being a small company, but we found an audience, and it's and we're so grateful that people come out and come see us. We didn't really know what we would get by starting a tiny Southeast theater company, but we've really found a group of people that might not be traditional theater goers, and they're great with us.
Does the audience have to see all four shows, or are they left complete, with just 1 week?
Well, I would prefer you see all four shows, but at the same time, there is only, 50-something seats in our theater, so not everyone can come, and we tend to have long lines out the door waiting to come see, we're lucky that way. So, but at the same time, I can't ask someone to come see every weekend in a row. I know that life gets in the way. And so we try to build out each episode to have enough content that if you only come to see one show, you're going to have a great time. You're going to want to see more because it has some of the best improvisers and actors that the city has to offer, like hands down. I will take on anybody who says otherwise, but we try to make it so you can have an individual experience. You can also see them out of order. Each one, we do a previously on, so we do a run through of what you might have seen, which is always silly and always pretty fun.
Oh, that sounds like fun. Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough to get people to go to see one show, just the one show. Right. So to have that commitment four times in a row, you must have some devoted audience members.
Well, we also we do season passes. So if you want to go see all four or just a couple.
Yeah, so you have special rates for people who want to see multiple times.
Yeah, I mean, we have a discounted rate for someone who wants to come see multiple episodes or a full season that you get in advance, and it tends to be pretty popular because it is such a fun, weird show, and I guarantee you that if you've never seen one of our types of shows before, you're gonna get addicted because it is the most immediate thing where the actors it's more structured than improv and it's more loose than theater, so it's sort of that like perfect medium, and if you're looking for something that just is immediate, happening right there in front of you and done by some very fantastic actors.
Well, we've talked about the how, but let's talk about the what. What is this show? And so it's called Sidekicks, and that's your new production. And it seems like you draw from the heroes of comic books, but they're not the actual heroes. They're the sidekicks, right?
Right. The show is Sidekicks, and it's an exclamation point because we are at the end of that, Sidekicks. I had this idea a couple years ago where I was reading a comic book, and I just was like, there's nothing about superheroes anymore that I really care about. They always win. They're always going to beat the bad guy. They're always going to have this, glorious finish. They're going to say the perfect one-liners that if you would say them out loud, you would just cringe at. The interesting people to me are the sidekicks, are the secondary people. Like, sidekicks are there to get punched in the face. They're there to, make some really awkward joke that nobody finds funny. They never get the girl or boy. They never win. You can kill off a sidekick and bring them back. You know, there's been one Captain America, for however many years. And so I was sort of, we equate sidekicks sort of similar to, people who are, we set it up as this, in this world, it's an office comedy. So seeing how the sidekicks are our heroes, the superheroes, we sort of deal with how being invulnerable makes you pretty vain and as a vehicle for lots of fun. I don't want to give away too many things about it, but let's just say that our sidekicks are on their own path to becoming heroes, and it's really fun.
Who are the sidekicks, though? What are the characters?
Well, we've got it's set in the Justice Union, which is a play on the Justice League. I know, but it is four heroes and four sidekicks, and there is Skylar Schmidt plays Captain Cascadia. Noelle Eaton plays Vitality, who is like she has super strength and can heal. Jake Michaels is Mr. Swift, who is a sort of like the Flash, and Devin Granmo, who's also one of our writers and company members, plays the Anger, who is a Hulk figure. We sort of base it off of popular tropes. And then the sidekicks, though, are some of the best improvisers in the city. You got Aubrey Jessen, who people might know from Follow the Band, who was a former company member with us.
They don't have names as characters?
Oh, they do, yes. Sorry.
Wait, what are their characters? Because I thought you were talking about the sidekicks, but right. You were talking about the heroes.
There's, they So they are partners with the heroes. Aubrey plays Diana York, who is taking over as the new Kid Cascadia, who is the she's sort of our we see her dealing with like being out of a job, and she gets a job offer from this superhero team to join and take over, joining Katie Michaels, who plays Scurry, who was based off of a flying squirrel and has the powers of an urban talking to urban animals. Hilarious. Leon Anderson, who is the Fist of Truth, who can tell when you're lying and also is like pretty strong. He's not super strength. He's just spent years learning capoeira.
Oh, Invincible.
Oh, Invincible. You can't forget Invincible. Invincible, played by Jed Arkley, whose real name is Rick, but they call him Invincible, taking the idea that you can be invincible, but he can't die, but he can feel every punch, every bullet, every little bit of pain. So he's sort of a broken man. Fantastically, but it's pretty funny.
Well, so the psychics do have superpowers?
They do. It's not as much as as the heroes do. They are stuck in this sort of their potentials is quite low, but they have as much power to get hired to be a teammate on a crime fighting team, but not enough to ever become a hero themselves.
That's kind of different because most psychics don't have superpowers, so they have a little bit there, just enough to make them frustrated.
Right. I mean, there's in this world of psychics, there are superheroes and there are people with abilities. There's villains. They have limited powers.
So Emily, you're one of the writers for Action Adventure Theater's Sidekicks. Tell me about, I guess, what you're doing for the show.
Right. I mean, I think the comparison to television is very apt because the way Pat and I are writers on a six writer team. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of whom are actors in the show, and then two of us are only writers. And it operates very similarly to a writer's room for television, where it's very collaborative. We write all the episodes together, and it's been a really fun experience, and it's just not anything that I've done anything like. I'm mostly my background is in playwriting, so I'm used to like myself at a computer banging out a play by myself, and this has just been something it's a completely different animal, where we all like go out for brunch and spend 2 hours just talking about, you know, what if they had this superpower and what are the villains after and that kind of thing.
There's a lot of discussion, and then afterwards you go and sit in front of the computer.
Yeah, and then it's also a lot of the looseness comes from the fact that we aren't scripting a show. We're, like Pat said, we're writing out plot points. We're developing character descriptions, like especially for this show, since there's so many characters. What we did to help the actors is we wrote character profiles for them. So we wrote up their backstory, their superpowers, their names, and that was a very collaborative, you know, like they found a lot of stuff in rehearsal and we added to that. But just to give them, because they're improvising a lot of dialogue and a lot of the plot points in the scenes, just to give them like a base to go from. And then the way that our script ends up looking is we have scene breakdowns and we figure out, you know, like the story arcs and the plot points that happen in every scene. And then in rehearsal, when Pat and Noah are directing the actors and they're in their improv exercises, it's about like structuring, you know, deciding who is going to come out with which plot point, when, what the relationships are going to be, and then they improvise from there.
So you're basically writing the structure of the play, and then they have to remember what they did. And I imagine that, you know, because it's improv, it's a little bit different each time.
Oh yeah, it actually, I was just sitting in on a rehearsal for an episode that I haven't seen for probably 2 weeks, at least. Yeah, I think it's been about 2 weeks since I've seen, and it's just completely different. And because they're some of the most hilarious people in the city, like every time they find the most hilarious new material, which is really fun to watch, because even I imagine if you come, since we have one episode a weekend, there's four performances of each episode, but I imagine each of those performances are going to be completely different. So it's a really fun, dynamic, and constantly evolving style of theater.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with my guests, Pat Morin and Emily Gregory, about Action Adventure Theater's new production called Sidekicks, which runs April 3rd through the 27th, Thursday through Sundays at 8 p.m. at 1050 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. So I imagine that this is pretty challenging work for the actors, but you mentioned that they can really handle, you know, the changes and having a different episode each week. But they play the same characters, so that's the same. But it's very different from doing repertory, though.
It is and it isn't. I mean, we have while the dialogue is not totally set, we have a very rigorous rehearsal process. Anywhere from 6 to 7 weeks, where we build it as a devised piece. So while there's nothing strictly forbidden for them to say in terms of lines, like, they have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen. It's just, it's the way that it's delivered and the exact content of the lines that differ. The jokes change and, like, the humor sort of depends on, like, if something doesn't work on Thursday, you don't have to say it on Friday. So you're not beholden to that. You are beholden to the actions and the plot points. But we, you know, actors get addicted to it. Some of our actors we use every single show that we do because they understand the material, they understand the process, and they're also just so good. But we're always trying to look to add new types of people. So the first few weeks are always pretty tough for even the most seasoned of actors or improvisers, because it's neither just one or the other. It's both. And it can be very challenging, but once you get the hang of it, which usually comes around the third week, you just can't do anything else. That's the reason why we keep sticking to this format.
Why do you think that comic books are so ripe for adaptation right now? Because they seem really hot right now. I mean, Marvel Comics is just going crazy with TV shows and films. And, you know, I mean, it just seems like everyone is doing more and more comic, not necessarily theater. But why do you think that that is now?
Well, a few things. I think myth has always been really a really important part of our storytelling, in terms of you can mine the depths of, you know, you've got origin stories, you've got these fantastical powers, and you've got all sorts of abilities that you can play with. But I think right now, I think that a lot of people who have grown up with comic books haven't left them. Like, you know, Portland has got one of the largest comic book cities in the industry, and you've got the ability to do anything. There are literally no rules except for following the ones that you set up for yourself. You know, if a character can't fly, he can't all of a sudden fly in the next panel. And I think it's such a visual medium too, that it's basically everything is already storyboarded for you too. You know, I've never left comics. I've always been a big fan. But in terms of it, New York has a very strong amount of comic book theater right now, and so we're lucky to be tagging in on that, on the upswing right now.
So, Emily, you're also a director as well as a writer, and you're directing a staged reading of Philip Kangatanda's Yankee Dog, You Die on April 4th at 7 p.m., and it's free at Portland Center Stage. I like that title a lot. I've heard about this play since the 80s, but I've never actually read it, you know, and until I saw this title, I was thinking, well, this is, you know, this is a great way to have it read to me, you know, but it really, what does that title refer to?
Oh, it's a play of two characters, Vincent Chang and Bradley Yamashita, and they're both of different generations of Asian American actors in Hollywood. They come from very different worlds. Vincent Chang is, you know, I think he's written his 50s or 60s, and so he came up in Hollywood during a very different climate of, you know, post-war, and Bradley Yamashita, you know, represents the new generation of young Asian American performers, and Yankee Dog, You Die is a reference to a very stereotypical character that Vincent played, where he basically played a Japanese soldier in a war movie, and played this very, like, comical, you know, almost minstrelsy kind of character, and had to repeat this line over and over and over again: "Yankee Dog, You Die." And yeah, it references the vast disparity in the kinds of roles that are available to actors of ethnic minority.
So there are two great actors playing those characters that you mentioned, and that's Paul Soucy, and he plays the younger actor, and Joseph Wall, he plays the veteran actor. And so how do these two characters interact with each other? I mean, there's a generational clash of sorts, isn't there?
Yeah, Bradley Mashida, played by Paul Soucy, is a character with a lot of political ideals. He comes from San Francisco, trained at ACT, comes from a theater background, and is just sort of, his arrival in Hollywood is a brutal eye-opening experience where he comes face to face with a lot of racism in you know, fictional portrayals of Asian characters, and also just like a wall in his career of there just aren't any parts available for him because people tell him that he's not qualified for any roles but stereotypical ones, you know, or the man on the street running from Godzilla, those kinds of things. And he comes in with very much this fiery attitude of I'm going to be the one to change it. We're of the generation that, you know, things are different now. We're, you know, referred to as Asian Americans instead of Orientals, you know, very much of a mindset like that. Whereas Vincent Chang is a veteran. He's been around for a very long time. He's managed to painstakingly carve a place for himself in Hollywood and has a lot of pride around that because he came from a generation where that just was almost impossible for people. But at the same time has to, in discussing acting with Bradley, he has to come to terms with the fact that he's made a lot of sacrifices to his dignity in order to carve out that career. And he has a very long resume of what Bradley would see as very insulting roles.
Makes for good conflict. So you have both these plays happening at the same time because Action Adventure opens April 3rd and then Yankee Dog is April 4th. So the theater's keeping you kind of busy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I have a couple other projects in the works for the summer as well. But there's never a dull moment in the theater because they also could not be two more different projects.
You kind of need that. You know, you kind of need that kind of diversity, yeah, you know, to have different things going on. So in the remaining time, Pat, what else is Action Adventure doing in the coming times? I mean, you actually have late nights at the same time, don't you?
Yeah, there's always a time slot after our main stage show where they use the same set. After Sidekicks, we have a thing called Pilot Season, in which we're doing this program where we've got after each episode of Sidekicks, there will be a pilot for a potential new show. Each one is different. There's four different shows. There's a dance show. We have one that's called Mars One, about what it's like to live on Mars. They're going to kill me for butchering any of this stuff. But we want to crowdsource our next show so the audience can come see that. And it's, you know, it's relatively inexpensive and you can vote on which one is your favorite. And whichever does the best, we'll do a full episode run next season. We also have a monthly show that we produce, co-produce with Portland Mercury, called Late Night Action with Alex Falcone and Bree Pruitt, which is every month, which is a live talk show, a hyper-local Portland show where we book local musicians and guests. We've had Steve Novick on, we've had Chelsea Kane, Matt Fraction, all sorts of people in town. It's always a lot of fun. You can check that out at actadventure.org. And then we have Crusoe, which is a modern adaptation in sort of our format of Robinson Crusoe, which is more to come on that later.
But. Well, it sounds like you guys have done well in the last few years since I've had you on stage and studio, and that you have a lot of things going on and your own space. So things are going well for you. So I'm really glad to talk with you today and hear and to get an update on all that. So thank you to both Pat Morin and Emily Gregory. Thanks for joining me on stage and studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Sidekicks, the new episodic comedy about heroes, villains, and who actually does the dirty work, is at Action Adventure Theater. It runs April 3rd through the 27th, Thursdays through Sundays at 8 p.m. Action Adventure Theater is located at 1050 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. For tickets and more info, visit actionadventure.org. And I have all that info on stageandstudio.org. The stage reading of Philip Khan Gatanda's Yankee Dog You Die is in the Ellen By Studio Portland Center Stage on April 4th at 7 p.m. Portland Center Stage is located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. For more info, visit pcs.org/blog or stageandstudio.org. Before we go today, the 10th Annual Art of the Story Storytelling Festival is on April 5th through the 12th in various Washington County Library locations. It's free to the public, and there are international and national storytellers performing. For more info, visit wccls.org/festival. That's wccls.org/festival, or call any Washington County Library. Also happening around town, Passon Art Theater presents Two Old Black Guys Sitting Around Talking by Gus Edwards. The show runs through April 13th at 7:30 p.m., Fridays and Saturdays, with a 3 p.m. matinee on Sundays. All shows are at the Ethos Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center. That's located at 5340 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. There's also a panel discussion with African-American playwright Gus Edwards on Saturday, April 5th, at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, April 6th after 3 p.m. For more info and tickets, visit passonart.org or call 503-235-8079. That's 503-235-8079. Tickets are also available at the door. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can hear the show again at stageandstudio.org, as well as the podcast on iTunes. Also, like us on facebook.com/stage_studio, or tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dimae Roberts. We're going to go out with another song by David Ornette Cherry from his new CD, It Could Be Different. This song is called Bird Boy. Find out more at davidornettecherry.com.
You're tuned to KBOO 90.7. Stay tuned for Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week our guest is Tom Richards. He's the curator slash janitor of the Faux Museum in Portland's Old Town. Tom's here to talk about the Faux Museum's new show, Collections and Anomalies, Public and Privates, which runs now through May 26th. Welcome, Tom. It's lovely to have you here at KBOO.
Oh, thanks very much, Joseph. Glad to be here.
For those who haven't been there, the Faux Museum is at 139 Northwest 2nd Avenue. That's Davis and 2nd in Old Town. And what you've done in this show is you've gathered collections from other people and other institutions and put them all in one room, basically, and built little dividers in places where you can have kind of screened off rooms. So how long was it putting all this together?
Well, I start putting it together before the show. And so it's been months going on, but seriously contacting people probably six months, and then putting up the show took 5 days this time.
Mm-hmm. And you have a show like every few months?
It's sporadic. I have a show. This one's lasting 2 months, but the one before was quite a long show, like 6 months. But usually mm-hmm. they're between 2 and 4 months.
Mm-hmm. And you like to hit the summer season when the tourists are coming by?
Right. Right. Most of my business, actually, 95% of my business is outside of Portland. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the KBOO will change all that. It'll be 95% Portland now.
Right. I'd never heard a Portlander going there, you know. It's never come up, but you read online people talking about it. So as you go in, there's this big statement on the walls printed out, and it talks about wonder. You're talking about wonder. You say wonder is a way of seeing life, the child's way, the artist's way. And then you talk about freeing it from its commodified strictures. And I was wondering what that means.
Well, I everything seems to be for sale nowadays. By the way, you can't get into the Faux Museum without paying something, so I guess it's for sale also. But
plus you have a gift shop.
Plus I have a gift shop, which you exit through. Mm-hmm. But I just like, this show is, a lot of my shows are about a way of seeing. This show specifically, I want people to see what other people collect and to kind of open up the world. And they can collect anything. They don't have to go to, you know, they don't have to collect a specific thing. They can see the world differently. Like when you go to a new city, you often see that city differently. And then after a while, you miss things and somebody else new comes to town. And they see your city kind of wonderfully,
mm-hmm.
and it's just about a way of seeing, I think, and it is free, and we should take advantage of it.
Of wonder.
Of wonder, yes.
Oh, okay, right. It's a kind of a stimulant. So people go in, they can wander around. Doesn't seem to be any order to anything. Everything is around the edge.
Right. This show, there is no order. Sometimes I'm really specific about how people go through the museum. I do have a pointer. So it is best to start to the right. But, you know, some people, I suspect some people listening to this station are people that go the other way when an arrow is pointing one way. And I don't really mind that.
I went in and the first thing I saw was a collection of lint. Washer lint and round doodles.
Right.
So this woman, Ellie Charpentier, had collected the, when her laundry's done, the kind of circles of kind of basically cat hair, right, isn't it?
Well, it's clothes hair and cat hair.
Yeah.
It's everything. It's the stuff that usually you find in the dryer.
Mm-hmm.
But her washing machine is a specific kind that has a center collector of lint, and it makes these little balls. She doesn't do anything to it. They're all different sizes. They kind of look like planets, all mm-hmm. different kind of planets or asteroids, and different colors depending on what she's washing. But they're memories for her, just like a tattoo would be for somebody else, a marker in time. And like she was looking at one, and she goes, "Oh, that's when I had this cat."
Oh, okay.
And so it's a way of, you know, again, it's a different. I mean, who would think of that?
And they're flat.
They're three-dimensional, but they're flat. They're not completely round. There's a few of them that are kind of round, but they're disc-like.
Next to them are circles of paper that have doodles on that are kind of mostly in a circular type of pattern.
Right.
So what's the connection there? Same person.
They're interspersed. And I think those were inspirations for her to make those doodles. And I like it because it's something I would have never thought of. It's completely different than something I would have thought of. But when you look at the two, they seem like they fit together. And that's what inspired her to make those doodles. She was a painter. She's a singer-songwriter now, but she was a painter and an artist. And now she doodles lint. It's pretty great.
And across the room, it just made me think of the fingernail collection.
Right.
So it's a little box about a foot square with a glass front and lots of little vials of nail clippings.
Right. It's nicely graphically displayed of something. The only thing in the show that kind of grossed me out, but I knew as soon as I knew it grossed me out, I knew I had to have it for the show. And I think they are finger and toenail clippings, a 15-year supply.
Yeah, this is Nora Bartlett.
Nova.
Sorry, Nova Bartlett.
Right.
That's a real person, right?
That's a real person.
Nova, I never heard that name before.
Yeah, well, La Nova is her real name.
And she goes to pains to make it clear that they're clean. She cleans her nails before she clips
them. She is a very clean person, but a very graphically interesting person and a very interesting person on her own right. And that's one thing that I try to do with the Faux Museum is I try not to judge people. And all sorts of people come by and they're not hipsters. Or maybe they look like hipsters, but maybe they look like a farmer. And they're really interesting people. There's so many interesting people with so many interesting hobbies or ways of seeing. And that's part of it. I mean, Nova's an interesting person, doesn't look like anything like Ellie or, you know, anybody else in there. But I thought that was odd, the nail clipping. And it gets attention, that's for sure.
Another little collection is wishbones.
Right.
So at this point, I'm starting to see things, and I don't really know